Now in its fifth year, London's Modern Magazine Conference is a firm fixture in the calendars of magazine enthusiasts from the UK and beyond. On today's programme, the man behind the conference tells us about this year's instalment and a few of his favourite titles right now. We also chat to the editor of a new publication celebrating small town life in Canada. That's all to come here on The Stack. From Midori House in London, this is The Stack, 30 minutes of print industry analysis with me, Tom Edwards. Ahead on today's programme, a new magazine for anyone who's ever dreamed of getting away from it all. The Maritime Edit celebrates the delights of life in Atlantic Canada. But for now, we're staying in the city. The magazine industry, flourishing as it is, can sometimes feel almost a little claustrophobic for those actually working in it. That might be why the Modern Magazine Conference, or ModMag for short, has established itself so quickly. It's a forum for everyone in the industry, from senior design directors to the founders of emerging indies, to come together and debate their craft, a welcome relief from working long hours, solo, or perhaps in a small team. Jeremy Leslie from Mag Culture is here in the studio to tell us more about this year's event. He's also brought in a pile of some of his favourite magazines to discuss them. I say favourite, maybe he's brought in things he doesn't like. All will be revealed.
As if.
Here he is. So, Jeremy, ModMag. Let's start with that, though, because that's quite exciting.
Absolutely.
It doesn't even seem like we can be talking about this year's iteration, so recent in my mind. Burned in as the last edition, but it's exciting. Time and tide waits for no man.
It's exhausting, isn't it? But yes, we're back on the ModMag wagon again, rounding up some fantastic creative people from the publishing world and offloading them into a hall in central London.
Very exciting.
This November, a new hall, a new home for ModMag this year.
Bigger, better than before.
Yeah, we had so many people disappointed last year with not being able to get tickets that we've moved to somewhere a little bigger. We're at the Conway Hall. A lovely sort of early 20th century wood panelled, almost a village hall, but a lovely space, which will be at our own. We'll have the whole area there for ourselves.
This is very exciting.
We can add extra things to the project.
Now, I think last year and in previous iterations, I've sort of irritated you by saying, well, yeah, but Jeremy, what's the theme? What's the takeaway? And you said, well, look, it's great people sharing great ideas. Do you need more of a theme than that? I mean, is it more of the same? Is it just going to be a sort of an amazing talking shop? Can you reveal any of the early speakers? I don't know.
We've got some great names already lined up, which I can come to. I think the idea of a theme is always a slight distraction. It is meant to be an alternative to so many publishing conventions and conferences, which disappear up the business model pipe. It's meant to be a creative celebration of what is good in the but with some pointers to what we can do to improve everything.
And that's a key point, because that really struck me last time, actually, was and this is quite like our Monocle House view. It was quite sort of proactive. I think it's very important, isn't it, to make sure that people go away feeling they've got, if not an agenda, they've got some actual dynamic things they can do rather than just ideas, which are interesting, but maybe not that useful.
We try to get a mix of different speakers of different types and different areas of expertise, but we work very hard. I brief every speaker. What we try to avoid is the traditional kind of portfolio piece where someone strolls in and says, oh, I did this, isn't it nice? I did that. We select the speakers and then brief them very carefully to create something fresh, which all does align behind a kind of a loose agenda. But one of the things we're going to do this year, which I'm really looking forward to and kind of answers your question about the theme, this is the fifth ModMag. And so we're going to round up some of the speakers who've spoken in the last 4 years and bring them back and talk about what's happened over those 5 years and look ahead 5 years. So I'm very much looking forward to that panel discussion, which will be a kind of centrepiece for this year. And we can expect some big names on that. And then we've got some speakers in their own right, fresh to ModMag, which we shall come to, I hope.
Well, yeah. Well, let's talk a bit about that, because it was really interesting last time and previous iterations as well, that it's not just sort of independent publishing and smaller magazines, because also we get views from big players, big established print titles that maybe come from a famous stable, print in all its forms.
Yes.
Newspapers, well, other periodicals. And can we expect, again, that sort of
absolutely.
Blend?
Absolutely. But this is, I mean, I think, you know, the whole Mag Culture project, the shop and everything, the website always gets a lot of attention for the indie side, because that is where a lot of the exciting stuff is going on. And it's the same here on the Stack. It's not an exclusive focus on the area, but obviously it gets a lot of attention. But we're also interested in the mainstream and newspapers and other and digital side. People are generally doing something interesting in the sphere of magazine publishing. So this time we will be mixing it up again. We've got Accent magazine on the indie side, along with Owen from It's Nice That on the digital side. But then we've also got Francesco Franchi, who's a very established editorial designer from known for his work on Eel magazine, but also currently now an editorial figure as well, a design figure at La Repubblica in Rome.
And really interesting, sort of some newer projects there, which are quite sort of unashamedly old school in a way in
absolutely,
their approach,
yes.
especially in their design ethic, which he's obviously deeply involved in.
Yeah.
And he talks amazingly about that.
He's an extreme, very interesting figure, because he did his dissertation at university on the idea of the modern newsroom and has since been allowed to experiment in real live newsrooms with what he wrote in his college dissertation, very successfully, both editorially and design-wise. So a great case study into how to develop mixed magazines and newspapers, which I think is a very key thing going forward.
Absolutely. Worth the admission money on its own.
Indeed.
Which subject? So where can people find out more? And obviously, I guess there'll be a nice sort of regular drip.
Yeah, we'll be announcing names over the summer, but the first names are up there now on the website. Early bird tickets are available till noon on the 24th, so you've got till Monday week to get in early and save a bit of money. But tickets are on sale over the summer. The student rates apply to young professionals as well, first year in working. And there's some further names to be added. In fact, we'll be adding some names on Monday in a couple of days. So
exciting. So, well, you'll see Jeremy and all these guests there. You might even see me there.
Absolutely.
Who knows? All sorts. Let's talk shop as well, Jeremy, because you've brought in a compact stack of magazines for us this week.
It's a stackette.
Well, again, how about that? Is there a bit of a theme to what have you got, a trio of titles, or are these just three things that are making you happy at the moment?
They're just three things. I mean, one of those questions on everyone's lips is, oh, so what are you enjoying at the moment? What's your favourite? What magazine are you like? And it's always
difficult.
It's a
good question, Jeremy. It's fine.
It's a vital question, but it's...
Don't knock my questions.
But sometimes you look around, we've got 450 magazines in the shop, and it can be sometimes hard to just look around and think, but so I just picked three that we've written about recently and or about to write that are on the kind of new shelf at the moment.
Okay, so what have we got? Where should we start?
Well, I'd like to start straight away with Accent.
Oh, of course, which you just mentioned.
Which I just mentioned. Lydia will be speaking at Mod Mag. This is just the third issue, and for a third issue, it seems to have grown up incredibly fast. You know, there's that kind of life cycle of a magazine. It starts off with promise and striking out into a particular direction. This magazine, I think, now has just reached a certain point where, wow, it's sort of hit the sweet point. It's familiar in terms of sort of fashion and transgender and that kind of intersectional kind of politics and fashion and everything. That's a common kind of theme in a number of magazines at the moment. But what fascinates me about this is the design. It's just hit some sort of weird amalgamation of hugely contemporary and yet very, very 80s.
I was about to say, you just flick through and there's a few pages that but sort of positively burn out, sort of 1985
well, there's
vibe.
Some stuff which is just, I mean, so this ages me now, because I look at this and I think, God, I was doing that in 1985. So it's very strange for me. I mean, almost identical. I mean, it's very, you know, and I'm not saying, you know, this. It's just things come round, and it's fascinating to see it sort of hit that. It's just sort of become something that's really fascinating. It's a very exciting magazine, I think, and it hits home with our customers.
And it's always good when, as you say, a magazine quickly evolves to hit a sweet spot. And that's, I guess, what happens when you have good people doing things they're passionate about.
Passionate about, but also convinced and with a lot of self-belief. And they work really, you know, you have to work hard to do this. And that it's great to see the payback when you look at it and realise they're achieving something special.
And I don't mind that bit of sort of neon-fused retro potency. Who doesn't want an 80s flashback is what I'm saying, Jeremy.
Maybe, in not fact, sure
probably,
I'm ready for it.
Probably quite a few people might write in to directly
no,
to the contrary.
No, but that, you know, they're in danger when you start talking like that. It seems terrible. It comes across as very, very retro. It's not. It's very, very contemporary and exciting and modern, but it's channeling all
it's
those things.
It's got a
things.
Knowing,
it's
a knowing nostalgic yeah, flourish. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, okay, thumbs up to Accent. Where should we go next?
We might just carry on with a little bit of nostalgia. Special Request is a magazine that I really enjoyed the first issue. each one's themed. The first issue came out a massive 4 years ago. I'm not quite sure why that's taken so long for issue two, which is about television.
Good things come to those that wait, I guess, or but, bide your time.
Well, I think maybe a look at the contents list and the people that contributed might give you an idea. We've got Haruki Murakami, people like that writing. That can't be easy. That probably
they're
took 1 year.
They're hard to get hold of.
But this is it's a magazine about television. It celebrates television, but it celebrates that era of television. And this is the nostalgia bit again. Before television just became another thing, when television was just a limited number of channels, everyone sat down to watch the same thing. And it's a fascinating read, apart from anything else. It's a great sort of period piece about that era. It's fascinating to see. I mean, there's so many magazines that we talk about are sort of striking out to the future and looking forwards, and this is a fascinating kind of, it is a backward look at the subject, but it's really fascinating kind of to wallow in that and acknowledge that there was an era when television was the be all and end all.
And you're not going to miss it on newsstands either, are you?
It's
positively
kind of, it's bright red with gold foil block logo, unmissable.
There you go. There's not enough of that. But it's an interesting point that you make there about television and looking backwards this way, because there was that feeling that there was an era of notoriety, of fame, where people were properly famous because we didn't have such a fragmented media landscape. And if you were famous, people knew about you. And that is very interesting. And I think, I don't know, just from a cursory glance, it seems like this is tapping into a bit of that idea of almost what fame or infamy was and how it's changed now.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, there's a comic strip from about Baywatch, the original version of Baywatch, where people like Pamela Anderson first appeared, and you're looking at her, and that TV show made her a star in a way that she can now appear on a magazine cover. For instance, she's on the cover of Buffalo Zine at the moment, and she's absolutely a stellar superstar above and beyond so many other people, but for the fact she was on that TV show in a swimsuit back in the 80s.
Fascinating stuff. That's special request number two. Well worth the wait. It was lengthy. I don't know. Issue three might be the same, another 4 years. Who knows?
I hope it'll be quicker.
With the stellar, but with that stellar cast, you're willing
absolutely
to give them the time.
I mentioned one of the writers that contributed. But there's another great piece by Ben Lurie. There's some really strong written content in that magazine.
That's what we like. That's what we like to see. That brings us to part of your magazine review. What have you here?
I have The Plant, a gardening magazine. Always a bit of a favourite. But I just brought this along, not just for the front cover. I mean, it's known for its front covers, and they're normally kind of slightly soft focus, blurry, beautiful, but kind of indistinct images of silhouettes of plants against a sky or whatever. This one, it's a water butt emptying its content into a watering can, and it's just, there's something about the act of watering, which is just such a pure, simple element of gardening or having an allotment or something. It just really engaged me. On one level, it's a nothing picture, but on another, it's just
positively,
the essence of gardening.
And you can hear the sound of it. You know that distinctive sound of a watering can filling up.
That kind
it takes
of slightly
you there.
Hollow sound as it hits the
and
bottom.
It rises as the level rises.
It just struck me as a very brave front cover, and that's something that's important when you're making an independent small magazine, that you do your own thing and you don't get hidebound by, oh, we're The Plant, we better do another kind of blurry, soft focused plant picture. It's a really striking front cover. Of course, there's some wonderful content inside. In particular, I remember maybe a year, 2 years back, The New Yorker had a fantastic piece about Nikki Sanfal's kind of theme park she built just before she died in Tuscany. And the one thing I wanted alongside that written piece, which was beautiful in its description, was some images. And here we've got the images as well as the piece, and it's fantastic. It's kind of a Gaudi-esque theme park built by the artist. So it's great to see those. And then, I mean, it's a usual delightful mix of illustration and imagery, taking you around places and just lots of lovely surprises. And a guide to looking after your aloe vera plant.
Which is always
vital.
Always good to know. Yeah. Jeremy, what a delightful selection. Thanks again, Jeremy. That's Jeremy Leslie from Mag Culture, and the fifth edition of the annual Modern Magazine Conference takes place in London on the 2nd of November. Details, as Jeremy mentioned.
Summer is officially here, and so is Monocle's bumper July-August double issue. Here we celebrate quality of life and reveal this year's rundown of the top 25 cities to live in worldwide. We also meet the people striving to make life in their cities better, from the mayor of Los Angeles to the sunny team that looks after Tokyo's parks and gardens, to the urban heroes giving back to their hometowns. Meanwhile, in design, we cast our gaze up to the rooftops in Milan and find a hidden and surprisingly verdant world above the fray. And of course, we've always got room for a bit of pure hedonism as we dance the night away in Tel Aviv, unwind in Finland's most inviting and steamiest company retreats, and tuck into some sun-kissed beach food in Valencia. And speaking of sun-kissed, we also sit down with Mario Testino for his hypothetical last meal. That's all in the July-August issue of Monocle, on newsstands everywhere now. Or head to monocle.com to become a subscriber.
The Monocle Weekly, our original Sunday show, brings you the best interviews with the writers, artists, thinkers, and innovators that shape our times. Also featuring fearless presenters.
It's not illegal, but it does have an effect.
Uh-oh. Are you ready for this, Tom?
I could do with some stimulation and some relaxation. How traumatised am I going
to
be?
How much of this do we need to drink to get an effect?
All of it.
Who ask the probing questions.
What is the kinkiest animal?
The mantis.
That's pretty kinky.
Headless thrusting.
And a good old-fashioned star turn or two, just for good measure.
We had a small editorial conference today where everyone was going, what do you think of Kylie's concert? When did you go? When are you going? What's happening?
So, yeah, I heard you guys had a debrief.
Yeah, we've had a debrief.
That's the Monocle Weekly. Sundays at 12 noon London time on Monocle 24. You wouldn't want to finish your week without it.
We head to Atlantic Canada now for a new title which celebrates the discreet luxury lifestyle of living big in the small towns of the region. It's just been launched. It's called The Maritime Edit. The title was founded by James Mullinger and Pamela Mullinger, herself a former publishing director for Monocle. Monocle's Fernando Augusto Pacheco spoke to James, the editor-in-chief of The Maritime Edit.
It's essentially a magazine celebrating the joys of living in, working in, visiting and doing business in Atlantic Canada. And I think it's important to point out that even though it is steeped in Atlantic Canadian art and design and culture and business, it's very much a national magazine. Like, we are sold across Canada. We are sold, you know, in Chapters, Indigo, Whole Foods and hundreds of other independent retailers across Canada. So we kind of have this ideology, which is that we are steeped in the East Coast, but essentially our ethos and our outlook can apply anywhere. Essentially, it's a celebration of living big in smaller cities.
James, and I must say, I think Canada is living quite a good moment abroad, you know, because, you know, Justin Trudeau in power. I think there's some sort of good soft power coming out from Canada. Perhaps the magazine would work in international countries as well. What do you think?
Yes, I mean, you're absolutely right. And obviously, that's one of the things that we're kind of looking forward to doing, in that, you know, we actually do have quite a significant number of subscribers in the UK, most of which I suspect are probably people from here that miss home, or people that are doing business here and are looking for kind of ways to expand their business here. But you're right, I mean, Canada is definitely going through this boom moment now, where people are looking to Canada, not just in terms of, you know, the fact that it's seems to be leading the way in terms of Western and liberal values, but also, you know, as a tourist destination. I mean, part of the reason that I left London, England, and moved here 3 years ago was for a better quality of life. And it was, you know, quite amazing to me when I first started exploring Atlantic Canada to discover that all of the places, all of these kind of amazing views and you know, I used to go from London to visit the Maldives or Mauritius or Bali, and actually you can have all of those incredible views and beautiful scenery here on the east coast of Canada. But you can also, you know, it's an extremely affordable cost of living here. But the big surprise for me moving here was that it wasn't a compromise culturally. Like, everything that I enjoyed about living in a big city, from amazing theatre to beautiful restaurants to nightlife, all of those things, I have all of those things here. So you're absolutely right. It's you know, everyone's looking at Canada. People are wanting to come here, and you know, the East Coast, as far as I'm concerned, is the greatest place on earth. And I'm keen to, you know, share that love, not just with the rest of Canada, but also with the rest of the world.
And reading the magazine, I could feel that. And even the cover story, I mean, first of all, we have to talk also about the design of the magazine. It's a really beautiful product, amazing paper stock. But the cover story, the Fogo Island Inn, I believe you wrote the story. I mean, what a fantastic place. And he made it for a very good cover.
Oh, thank you very much. First of all, the design of the magazine is all down to one designer. And my background in magazines was working with, you know, you'd have 10 designers working on a magazine. This was one designer by the name of Lindsay Vauteur, who is a designer based here in Rosay, New Brunswick. An incredible talent, and again, someone who is a perfect example of a world-class creative who has chosen to live a life in a smaller city and have a better quality of life in a smaller city. And yeah, the choice of Fogo Island Inn as a cover story for the first issue just made perfect sense in terms of, you know, it's a real success story, but most importantly, it's the story of one woman going out to do an amazing social thing for the place that she's from and the place that she loves. And I think that this is kind of an important point about the magazine, is that, you know, this is a magazine for everyone. And the great thing about living in Atlantic Canada is that everyone enjoys this quality of life. And that's not to say that there aren't problems here. Of course there are. But all of these amazing things, these views and the lifestyle and the outdoor life, the kind of things that you'd need to be kind of extremely wealthy in almost any other part of the world to enjoy. And yet here, everyone has access to it. So obviously Fogo Island Inn itself is an extremely expensive hotel to visit, which is why the cover story didn't function as a hotel review. We're not saying don't go there, but we're not saying, you know, this is the place you have to go, because it is extremely expensive. The story that we're telling is the amazing story of Zita Cobb, who, you know, was from Fogo Island, went away, was very successful, came back to the island, saw it in a state of disarray and job losses and people suffering, and she wanted to do something to help. So she introduced scholarships for kids to help them. And one of the mothers said to her, you're paying our children to leave. You know, why are you doing this? And she tried to thought of a more sustainable economic model. And the model was Fogo Island Inn, create this incredibly luxurious hotel resort that the likes of Gwyneth Paltrow want to come to. And again, you know, the wonderful thing about a project like that is that on any level, we can all relate to a situation where we're trying to do something outside of the curve and everyone's telling us that won't work. And of course, we know that. We launched a magazine in 2017, a print title with no digital version. And of course, there were people saying to us, you know, oh, well, that can't work. You know, isn't it all Facebook now? It's like, yeah, right. So we know that kind of absurd, kind of negative outlook when people say, well, that's not possible. And she went out and she did this incredible thing. But most importantly, you know, it's created this colossal industry on that island. And really, we wanted to tell that story because it's an inspiring story tell. We can all do that on different levels. You know, we haven't all got that kind of money to play with, but we can all do things for our communities that help people in our community on that level. And so it was very important for us to celebrate that.
James, another thing I noticed, even though the magazine, of course, is all about nice living in Atlantic Canada, but there are also stories from even other countries, for example, the story about the rebirth of Miami. So will you also add some of those articles? So it's not going to be 100% life in the Atlantic Canada.
Absolutely right. And I mean, a lot of cases, there'll be some kind of a hook to here. For example, you know, getting to Miami from here is very easy, which is why that was in there. But equally, in our second issue, we have a feature by a British shoot producer by the name of Lucy Watson, who, you know, spent many years, you know, living the high life in London and moved to the countryside for a better quality of life. And actually her business thrived rather than suffered. So essentially it's about living big in smaller places. But again, yes, what we want is to appeal to anyone. So, I mean, a perfect example is the big interview with Joel Plaskett. He's an internationally renowned recording artist from the East Coast, but anyone anywhere could and will be interested in his story. So you're absolutely right. It's geared to here, but essentially could apply to anyone. And of course, that was a huge reason why we kind of invested so much in the paper stock and particularly the beautiful soft touch cover, was we wanted this magazine to jump out at newsstands nationally. So, you know, while we, you know, lucky enough to have all the people in Atlantic Canada getting behind it. We want the people in Vancouver to see it on the newsstand in Whole Foods and think, oh, that looks interesting. And even though they might not have any family link to this part of the country, they kind of want to embrace the whole ethos of the magazine. And that was definitely something very important to us.
James, finally, I just want to know about issue two. When is it coming out? Because I believe in, issue number one is already out in the newsstands and for the subscribers as well.
So the first issue's been doing colossally well, and you know, it's a kind of not a surprise to us, but definitely a very, very pleasant thing to kind of, you know, for subscriptions to be above and beyond what we had hoped, and sales to the roof. We're actually almost, a lot of the stores have been selling out of issue one already, and we're right in the thick of designing the second one now, and it's out on the 8th of September. And, you know, I honestly believe it's even better than the first, and, you know, which of course is always going to be the intention. You always want to do better. But, you know, when you get your first issue out, you then have a very, and you start getting feedback from people, and people are really kind of, you know, embracing what it's all about. You know, you kind of feel more confident, and it's very, because it's a very difficult thing, as you know, you spend a year working alone trying to get something together, and then once suddenly it's out there, and you know, when people are, you know, embracing it, and you know, I mean, the response has just been incredible. So, working on the second issue, we definitely feel a lot more confident and very, very excited for everyone to see it. But it's a dream, and basically, when we moved here from England, you know, 3 years ago, we couldn't believe that there wasn't such a magazine. We couldn't believe that this didn't exist. And we'd kind of made a pact to ourselves that when we moved here, we weren't going to miss anything. If something didn't exist here, we weren't going to complain about it. We would create it. So, you know, we moved to this east coast of Canada. It's a very different place to London, England. And we couldn't believe that this incredible lifestyle that everyone enjoys here wasn't reflected in the mainstream media or any kind of print medium. And so rather than complain, we just did it. And now we have. And yeah, I can't wait for everyone to see issue two. And it's, you know, in some ways, it's more of the same in terms of, you know, the types of stories that we're telling and the community building stories and the celebrating Atlantic Canadian talent. But there's also a lot of curveballs in there that I think are going to surprise people and impress people.
That was James Mullinger, Editor-in-Chief and co-founder of the Maritime Edit, in conversation with Fernando. And that is all we have time for on this week's programme. Thanks to Fernando, to Henry Rhys Sheridan and our editor Cassie Galpin. Comments or queries are always welcome. Drop an email to Fernando, he's on fp@monocle.com, and don't forget to join us at the same time next week. This is The Stack, I'm Tom Edwards. Thank you for listening.